the written permission of the business owner, and there was only two vehicles on that lot parked there overnight in a similar situation. So apparently your laws are more liberal than Santa Cruz's, if that's the case.
That's a Santa Cruz municipal code that they passed?
Yeah, there was a municipal code that was passed in 99 that allows two vehicles per business parking lot, three vehicles per church parking lot, with the written permission of the owner to sleep there. There's some dispute now as to whether, actually now that's for only for 72 hours in the case of the business, but unlimited period of time in the case of the church, again with the permission of the church. You can't do it in a tent, you can't sleep outside on church property, even with the permission of the church. There's a 72-hour limit on all sleeping on all private property where it's allowed, and it's only allowed in backyards and fenced-in side yards and front yards that are not visible from the street. That's the rule in the Santa Cruz City limits with the municipal code called 6.36, the camping ordinance.
Well, thank the Great Spirit that Santa Monica hasn't gone to that step yet.
What is the law in Santa Monica regarding vehicles in sleeping in vehicles on public property? I recall there was a rather unusual liberal law in the 80s written by Bob Myers, the city attorney, who was eventually kicked out by the city council for being too nice to homeless people. And then there was a change in the law that happened in 1994 when a massive right-wing effort to criminalize homeless people happened and sort of frightened the city council into passing some preemptive legislation. Do you know what the current legal status for homeless people is here in Santa Monica in vehicles?
Fairly well, yeah. Since just last year, the drive was spearheaded by the police department of Santa Monica to kick everybody in the city living in a vehicle out of town. And just to give you the context on that, there's 86,000 people, roughly, in Santa Monica. In this town of 86,000 people, 10 square miles, the city police department found out that we had a overwhelming flood of 70 people in the entire city living in their vehicle. But that apparently for this wealthy tourist city is just too much. So they tried to kick us all out. And to answer your question, we found out that the current state of the law in Santa Monica is that it is illegal to sleep in a vehicle for more than 30 minutes in a residential zone. And there's four residential zones in the city. What the law, for some reason, has the oversight of not mentioning any of the other zones, mixed-use, light industrial zones in the city. And
what percentage of the city does that four residential zones make up?
I haven't looked at that. I couldn't tell you, but I would guess
half the city or less.
I would say at least half, maybe three quarters, because 80% of the city of Santa Monica is renters, and it's a lot of residences here.
So, and in fact, this is the Myers Law of the 80s that protected homeless people. In essence, it said, A, you can sleep anywhere you want. It's non-residential in a vehicle. You can't be bothered. And B, if you sleep in a vehicle in a residential area, you still have half an hour's worth. Is there an amount of time? It has to be essentially on complaint by a resident, or no? Can we just be a police officer noticing you there for more than half an hour?
Just a police officer noticing you in Santa Monica.
Does that mean, in fact, that people sleeping in their vehicles in industrial zones are not bothered, or are police using other means to go after them?
There's some reports of people being bothered. I don't know of anybody who's actually gathered up in the city numbers or complaints. We haven't, the homeless newspaper, we haven't been able to really
change the name of the homeless paper.
Yeah, we haven't really been able to dig into that. We get a lot of anecdotal reports, and nobody has decided that they wanted to stand up and get to the bottom of that issue. Last year when we fought off this push by the police department.
To change this law?
They tried to, and we held a series of community meetings where we homeless people rallied together, and we pointed out that while they had attacked the city council with this gigantic presentation claiming a flood of over 200 complaints every year of homeless people sleeping in their vehicles, we pointed out, well, with 70 people sleeping in their vehicles 365 days a year, that amounts to about 250 or 25,000 potential complaints that could be generated if just one person on an entire street wanted to complain about that, quote, nasty homeless person or lazy, shiftless quote.
Or a genuine problem such as dumping trash on the street or being abusive or parking in front of your driveway or some such thing. That would be a legitimate concern of a resident.
Yeah, so out of over 25,000 times a year, where there might be the potential for a legitimate complaint to be completed, only 250 amounts to less than 1% of the time that one person on an entire block complained. And so we pointed out that there is no massive outcry in the city.
But there was a massive outcry in the police department officialdom, though.
That's what emerged, yes.
Now, what about the city council? Did they vote simply to shelve this or not even to take it up? Or what was what were the dimensions of the discussion there?
The issue was brought up, they used the tactic that a lot of politicians, when they don't want to deal directly with an issue or stand up for their principles on the issue, they sent it back to committee.
I see, so it never came out of committee, actually. It died in committee?
Yes, yeah. But it's sort of like Dracula, you know, anytime things can get dark, you know, there's nothing keeping the vampires from coming back out of the coffin with their plan to attack us in the middle of the night.
The Patriot Act, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Now, in 1994, I guess I was misremembering, it wasn't people in vehicles that got the shaft, it was homeless people elsewhere. Isn't there a law that criminalizes homeless people from sleeping on public property in Santa Monica?
Yeah. Santa Monica is one of the first, probably 10 cities in the country to pass an anti-camping law, which is an absurd thing because to apply a law against homeless people and call it a camping law is just absurd because no homeless person, this isn't camping, this is survival. But that's part of the denial of too many officials and Americans that that's what we're engaged in.
Is there much violence against homeless people in Santa Monica in terms of either vigilante or police action? Have you got any stats on that or any sense of whether that's increasing or decreasing in the last year or two?
Well, you know, the only way I can answer that is being homeless is violence. And, I mean, that's the truthful answer to that. That's the real answer that we all know. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. The answer about things like the hate attacks that were statistics on that were compiled by the National Coalition for the Homeless. I think they found last year there were 80 homeless murders or violent attacks where people were like set on fire in homeless hate crimes here in Santa Monica. There's no compiling of statistics on homeless hate crimes against homeless people. While there are statistics compiled about hate crimes against other people, we have, thankfully, no major hate crime that we know of. That doesn't mean, even though we have a homeless newspaper in the city, that we know that we can say for a fact that that hasn't occurred because, like in most communities, homeless papers are surviving by a handful of dedicated people, and we just don't get the facts on everything.
Now, the homeless newspaper you talk about, Making Change, it was involved in some controversy 4 or 5 years ago, and it was struggling against what was perceived as competition locally, and perhaps even more ominously, a kind of a profound competition against homeless papers generally by the big issue, the London-based mega paper, which publishes every week, and which is sold by homeless people in, I guess, 5 or 6 different large cities in the world. 3 of them in England, like one in South Africa, one in Australia. I'm not sure, but there's it's a worldwide paper with.
I think they're in the Netherlands too.
The Netherlands now as well. You know, they're a paper which is. They've been characterized differently, and I haven't been following them in recent years in any detail. I don't subscribe to them. But they were considered in 1997, when I went to the meeting of NASNA, North American Street Newspaper Association, a group that was essentially using homeless people to distribute and sell a product that essentially kind of ripped off the homeless, but also had a certain, you know, it used a certain glitz or a patina of concern for homeless people, but also was more into, you know, mainstream frills and stuff, you know, in public interest stories about Princess Di and that sort of thing. Anyway, they had a problem with, we had a problem with them coming into the country because we were afraid they were going to, in essence, supplant local homeless papers that were struggling, and also some of us were concerned that advocacy was our interest, not, you know, putting together a product that homeless people could sell, like pens or, you know, pencils or apples on the corner, you know, where they get a small percentage of the money, but rather changing the situation through spreading in news of the homeless struggle through print. And
yeah, Robert, if
I went on about that for some time, I apologize.
But you explained the situation well, and to put it simply, for anybody who wants to understand some of the root causes of homelessness in America, and people are always saying, well, why are people homeless in America? Why are you homeless in America? The whole controversy over the big issue is worth looking into, because it's a stark and egregious illustration of what causes homelessness in America. The big issue is a, quote, charity. And the question is, are charities solving homelessness in America, or are they perpetuating it? And if you look, and if you want to understand what homeless people say, will mean when they say that we don't want charity, we want justice, look at the big issue. The big issue is a global publishing empire being built on the backs of homeless slave labor. That's the fact. Everybody understands today that you can own a multi-million-dollar corporation that makes no money but is worth billions of dollars if you walk into a bank and you sell nothing more substantial than a name. And the big issue is a gigantic growing charity foundation.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, listening to David Bush, a Santa Monica activist, talking to me, Robert Norris.
You were saying the big issue is it's a brand name that's being built by the blood, the sweat, the suffering of homeless people throughout the world, so that a handful of people around its publishers and editors can have some cushy little yuppie jobs, and that the owners of the big issue, which remains clouded to this day, who it is who actually owns the trademark name, the big issue, can, when they choose to retire, if they want to sell a lifetime of work of homeless people suffering and pain to some media conglomerate like AOL Time Warner or Rupert Murdoch's sons, cash out for $1 billion or more. That's how you rip off homeless people for bleeding and dying in the streets, and you call it charity, and you raise millions of dollars, and you give 10 or 20% of it even to a foundation while you steal 90% of a person's life.
Well, you know, it's pretty harsh words for John Bird, the founder and big cheese of the big issue, who perhaps well-deserved words. But here in Santa Monica, Making Change entered into a deal with the big issue 3 or 4 years ago, because they were, there are a couple of factors involved. Several people in NASNA, North American Street Newspaper Association, were interested in getting the big issue into NASNA, and it may have actually gotten into NASNA or not. I'm not sure exactly what its status is. It sent people to the last NASNA conference in San Francisco last summer, and there's concern that it is surrogate papers in New York City that are involved here.
Let's delve into this a little bit more so that I can be really clear on this. The difference between charity and empowerment. Empowerment, it's not just in homeless newspapers, it's not just in homelessness, it's in America. Slave labor is when you are working for a company and you don't own that company. Shareholders own it, and they can sell you, they can sell your pension plan, they can sell your 401k. That's slave labor in the 21st century. And that's what they do in charity under the guise of charity. That's what they do in corporations under the guise of corporate profitability. And what they do and we've got to get straight in this country and on this planet. You want to know what the solution is to homelessness on this planet? And probably half the people on this earth are homeless. Half, according to the UN Program for Human Development, let's all realize this. Half the people in the world today are living on $2 a day or less. You tell me if they're not homeless. And if we're going to solve that in our lifetime, and we better, and we ought, because we finally have, everybody can see the ability to do so, we're going to have to get really clear on the concept. Workers own their labor, and the minute you steal it, you make people homeless. And as far as NASNA goes, NASNA needs to get that straight. The idea of, quote, homeless publishers or homeless newspaper builders in cities in America wanting to emulate the big issue model or make homeless newspapers more corporate professional. professional, they're the enemies of homeless people in this country. That's the stand as a member of NASA I take.
Well, I'm hoping you're actually going to write something about that, David, because I think that you put it very well.
I will.
I will, and I'll try to make it even more succinct.
Oh, wow. Good. Well, here in Santa Monica, I know there was a... the big issue decided to come into Los Angeles, and they didn't tell NASA they were doing so, and they let people to think sort of the opposite. And then they set up base in Santa Monica, where you already had a homeless newspaper, Making Change, a much smaller weekly paper that I guess you've been involved with.
Yeah, Making Change. Making Change was begun about 4 years ago. It was built on the work of the man who founded the first homeless newspaper in Santa Monica, Len Doucette, who was a homeless man who founded a paper called Hard Times. When Len Doucette became so ill that he couldn't continue on after 4 years of doing Hard Times, Jennifer Wagner was invited to build on that foundation, and for the last 4 years she's attempted to expand and grow a homeless activist paper in LA, and it's been quite a struggle, and we've hashed out a lot of these debates not only within NASNA but within ourselves. When you engage in struggle, maybe the first thing you do is you figure out what you need to carry on the march and what you have to jettison on the march. And we've had homelessness become an issue in this country for people who are under the age of 30. You might be amazed to realize that 20 years ago, people, if you would have said, is there homelessness in America, people would have said no. So for the last 20 years, we've had to figure out who we are, how we're going to fight our battle, and that struggle continues today, and it's part of the formation of homeless newspapers, where a lot of these debates, what's really at stake, are realized.
So what came up in these debates, and what decisions did you make?
Well, sort of the issues again is how do you structure a corporation for justice? We believe generally the consensus is in the core group of people around the homeless newspaper Making Change that a cooperative economic structure in word and in deed, in act, it helps fight homelessness rather than just giving people a few pennies so that they can make it through the day. It gives them ownership of their labor. And then we've looked at issues about media and what is the role of media in either propagandizing people or waking them up. And although it's not, you know, you just don't hear these debates just like you don't hear people like Howard Zinn, a historian, or Noam Chomsky, considered to be, by most of the world, America's most leading intellectual. You don't hear those debates in the popular media, but the most crucial debates around history and politics revolve around those kind of people, and some of the most crucial debates in media revolve around a person who's little heard of today, unfortunately, but Marshall McLuhan, and his research and proposals about what is the role of advertising in media, print, and electronic. And so what we've looked at is whether a homeless paper is fighting homelessness or perpetuating it by taking advertising. And what is it that people, when they read an advertisement, what does it hypnotize them into thinking? And does that does the message that goes with an ad in a homeless newspaper maybe undo everything that is said in the editorial side of the newspaper?
Give me an example of this.
Well, the simplest example is one I think we can all relate to. And Marshall McLuhan was a brilliant Canadian intellectual in the 60s who was chaired of Media Studies Department in Canada. Wrote several books, The Mechanical Bride, The Medium is the Massage, and others. And if you want to really understand media, read one of his books called Understanding Media. Or you want to begin to understand media from a real alternative perspective, that would be a great place to start. And to give you a quick example, and one that we can all relate to even if we haven't read McLuhan, it's very much something we all know. It's what do you know when your parents said to you when you were growing up, don't do as I do, do as I say. You immediately know that whatever advice they're giving you is bullshit because they can't even live by it. And excuse my language, but we all know that. So what are you saying when you say that the biggest problem in America is greedy corporate scumbags stealing from us all, and yet you run full-page ads in a half or more of your paper taking money from these greedy corporate scumbags, not only taking money, but touting their worldview, touting their claim that their product is good, touting that creating a visual layout that entices people to see their activity as beautiful. Oh, here's a beautiful car in a beautiful setting. I'll give you a quick example about the big issue. Back in 96, when they were coming to LA and trying to bulldozer their way into the city without any homeless support.
On the other hand, Len Doucette did get on their payroll, as did Ted Hayes, as I understand it. Both of them, Len, as you mentioned, the originator of Hard Times, and Ted Hayes, the founder of Justiceville, the ARCO Richmond-backed homeless dome village, or Justiceville, as it's now called.
Yeah. Well, we're all on a path, Robert, and we all bring some knowledge to this movement, and Ted Hayes brought a lot of knowledge to LA in the 80s and the 90s, and any activist in this country who thinks that they do nothing wrong needs to get a primary grade education in life before they
criticize others.
Yeah. So, speaking as the principal stone thrower,
the reality is,
this is a struggle. As we're saying here, this is a struggle in the homeless newspaper movement. Should homeless newspapers take ads? Should they take foundation support?
Floyd, an outlaw, Oklahoma, doing well. It was in the town of Shawnee, it was Saturday afternoon, his wife beside him in his wagon. It was in the town they rode. There a deputy sheriff approached him in a manner rather rude, using vulgar words of language, and his wife, she overheard. Well, pretty boy grabbed the lock chain, and the deputy grabbed his gun. In the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. Well, there's many a starving farmer, the same old story told, how an outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little home. Others tell you of a stranger who came to beg a meal, and underneath his napkin left $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City, it was on a Christmas day, there came a whole carload of groceries with a letter that did say, well, you say that I'm an outlaw, you tell me I'm a thief. Well, here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. Through this world I've traveled, I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six-gun, and some with a fountain pen. But as through this world you ramble, and as through this world you roam, you will never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.
That was David Rovix singing a Woody Guthrie song, Pretty Boy Floyd. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We kind of reached the halfway point at that selection of a David Busch interview. David Busch, activist down there in Santa Monica, talking about the struggles of homeless people, specifically his work with Making Change, the Santa Monica homeless newspaper, and how it fights larger corporate ripoff efforts like those that come from the international conglomerate, The Big Issue, which relies on a lot of homeless labor, homeless slave labor, as David Busch puts it. And we're going to be hearing more of that interview. I'd kind of hope to break it up with not only a little music, but a couple of interviews we'd hope to get on the phone activist and attorney Kate Wells, who will actually be one of the two attorneys working on the lawsuit against Mayor Crone and City Council's abusive practices at City Council to try to rein them in and get some restoration of the First Amendment at City Council, and that'll be happening on Tuesday at a press conference at 6:30 after a federal lawsuit is filed. And, of course, folks are invited. There'll be some free food. And then at City Council, we'll be talking about issues. One issue that's going to be coming back is the issue of the final reading, probably a pro forma reading that doesn't really involve a lot of changes or any changes. It involves restoring the situation to what it was before Kennedy and Barisoni mucked it up. Kennedy's a council member, Barisoni's our city attorney, and we're talking about the issue of the much too ballyhooed three-day restriction. There's a three-day restriction on parking your vehicle in a private driveway and sleeping there. You can do that with the permission of the owner and the renter. However, you can't do it for more than 3 days, thanks to Councilmember Fitzmaurice, who proposed that back in 1999 to limit the original proposal from the task force to examine the camping ordinance, Byers, Crone, and Sugar, who came out with a broader proposal that allowed you to sleep in your vehicle in a driveway for any length of time, provided there were no complaints and that there were zoning laws to cover it and so forth. And Rotkin, then on the council, raised the roof, and Fitzmaurice played his conservative role and threw in this three-day amendment. Then Barisoni mucked it up, misunderstood what the council was doing, and added a sentence that applied this three-day restriction, 3 days per month only, not just to driveways, but also to yards, to church parking lots, and to business parking lots. And it wasn't even noticed by the police department, which apparently oriented its officers differently, according to an officer I contacted. Kennedy apparently says he has different experience talking to an officer, and Deputy Chief Locke first said one thing, then said another. But eventually what happened was, if you look back on the tapes and you look at the original report of the task force to examine the camping ordinance back in 1999, when the matter was before City Council, you find that indeed the three-day restriction per month was only to apply to driving driveways, and it shouldn't have applied there either, but you know, we have the Fitzmaurice factor unfortunately plaguing us every City Council meeting, and 1999 in February was no exception, and he introduced that resolution and it passed. So Kennedy, however, and Barisoni misconstrued that, and Kennedy then made it explicit, saying taking Barisoni's misconstruction of the three-day rule to apply to all camping on private property, and made it very explicit, and then acted like he was doing us all a big favor by eliminating this imaginary restriction from churches, when there had never been a restriction on churches. You can only park three vehicles in churches, but in church parking lots, but you can stay overnight there, but you can't, there's been no restriction on the amount of time. Well, Kennedy acted like there was, and defended it at great length, but finally, with activist pressure and revealing the record, City Council agreed not to change it as they could have by an immediate ordinance, but to wait a couple weeks, and actually, at the current time, it's illegal, technically illegal, to be in a backyard more than three nights, to be in a side yard more than three nights, because the council explicitly made it illegal, thanks to Kennedy's law. But at the last council meeting, this was turned around again in a more elaborate process, so that we get back to the original situation, which it's only a three-day restriction on driveways. However, that hasn't passed finally. The final, second reading, all laws require two readings at City Council, unless they're emergency ordinances, which is what I suggested they could have done with this one, since it was pretty clearly just a mistake and needed to be dealt with immediately, because for homeless people, it is an emergency if you have no place to go. And if people are told, well, it's not going to be for another month, it'll be legal for you to sleep in a backyard for more than 3 days, that might actually have some life-threatening consequences for some homeless people, since it's illegal to sleep on any public property in the city. If you're also going to cut back private property that way, it means they have nowhere to go, and it makes it much more difficult. But the City Council didn't consider it an emergency. It never considers the homeless situation an emergency, and they simply proceeded with the usual approach, which was they waited 2 weeks, and then they proposed striking the three-day restriction, except for driveways. And now it's going through a second reading, which if it passes on Tuesday evening, which is when it's scheduled for, it means in a month it'll be changed. Though we will hope and presume that the police are not going to enforce the current law, which is a stupid law that Kennedy just had to have primarily, I think, to satisfy his ego. I can't imagine he was claiming that there would be all kinds of complaints that they were discarding good public process by simply doing what the council originally did and correcting the mistakes of Barisoni. But of course, Kennedy went his own way and passed this, and the council went along with him. One wonders what these guys were elected for. I thought they were throwing out the Kennedy-Rotkin regime. Apparently they weren't, and I don't know what to say. Anyway, I was This was the same council meeting at which eventually I was ejected from and arrested at for protesting silently, briefly, the abusive treatment that Susan Zeman received at the hands of Mayor Crone. I don't mean that he beat her up. I don't mean that he verbally lashed her. I mean that he denied her basic First Amendment rights to speak at the mic, even though the oral communications time wasn't up, and even though he, Crone, had violated his own rules by interrupting another speaker with a series of questions and commentary, which essentially should have time should have been given back to the oral communications public so that they could use that time, but he didn't do that. And she went to the mic to protest it, and she was told, leave or we'll take you out of the room. And my response was, you know, oh, well, thank you, Mr. Fascist Mayor. I didn't say that. I just raised my arm briefly in what I consider is a shorthand for that kind of message. And I don't think it's rude. I think it's pretty straightforward. And I think what he did was simply a violation of the First Amendment and a violation of his own city council process. And, of course, what they did to me was even worse and even more blatant and explicit. But it's good when these things become blatant and explicit because then you take away the mask and you take away the veil and you see what's really going on and the public has a chance to make its own choices. And hopefully, well, hopefully the courts, if not the public, will at least give us a fair ruling on this issue and we'll find out. What I'm going to play now is some tape from the city council meeting of March 12th in the afternoon session when this first reading of the correction of the camping ordinance corrections came up. And that, again, what's interesting here is, again, to hear, to me, it's how subdued the whole discussion has become. Instead of really talking about they really need to be changing what their own committees have endlessly told them to change, the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, to set up campgrounds, I mean, how many times do you have to say that? How many deaths do we need? How many cases of people going to the hospital with overdoses? How much misery and suffering has to be created before people stand up and force the council to do this? Because clearly, the wonderful, sweet, kind-hearted city council is not going to do it out of the goodness of its own heart. It's just not going to do it, just for the same reason that politicians will not end segregation and slavery out of the goodness of their own heart. They just don't do it. That's just not in the cards. It requires mass movement from people, and that hopefully is what we're going to get at the Homeless Summit when we come back in May on the 3rd and 4th. And if you want more information about any of this stuff, give a call to 423. Huh. But while we're about it, let's hear some of the city council meeting from March 12th. This was the afternoon before the evening when I was arrested and taken out. And you'll hear some of the discussion on the camping corrections, which will be coming back in the evening of March 26th. So for those of you who want to kind of get primed, you might want to listen to this.
Let council members know we will be introducing the Youth Advisory Board at 4:30. Are there any statements of disqualification concerning anything on today's agenda?
This is Mayor Crone.
Seeing none, are there any additions or deletions? Then we'll move right to the consent agenda. Would anyone like to pull anything from the consent agenda? I have yet had any green cards presented to me. Yes. I'm speaking of consent agenda items, so I don't have any in front of me.
I'll move the consent agenda.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Kennedy.
I'd just like to note my abstention on the evening session minutes of February 12th, because I was not present.
And I already spoke to the city clerk about an item that I...
correction to page 414 of the minutes of February the 12th was placed in your green folder.
We have a motion, did I hear a second, to move the consent agenda? Supporter seconds. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Passes unanimously. We will move then to item number 20. I think that might be the first time that, since I've been on the council, that no one has pulled an item from the consent agenda.
And there are reasons why people don't pull items from the consent agenda anymore. One of them is that when I pulled a number of items from the consent agenda, as I've mentioned on the show before, he placed all those items 7 hours ahead, so they couldn't be discussed. On other occasions, he's limited time to 30 seconds to a minute per item. The discouraging of the public process here is one of the reasons that may be at play, although it may have to do with the actual consent agenda. Now comes item 20, camping ban corrections.
I hope it does, yeah. I hope it bodes well. Item 20 has to do with camping ordinance amendments introduced by Councilmember Riley and myself, and this is introduction of an ordinance for publication amending section 6.36.020 of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code pertaining to camping. I would briefly say that Ms. Riley isn't here. The reason we put this forward was a couple of years ago when the City Council was looking at the camping ordinance and looking at the community to step forward and participate in alleviating homelessness in the city. We passed at that time a three-day vehicle ordinance in which vehicles could park in someone's driveway. That was an attempt to get more community members involved. At the time when it came back to us, it included side yards and backyards, which up until that time had not been limited to 3 days. And in fact, as far as I know, since I've been on the council, have never had any anyone calling me or seeing anything written about that issue. So I checked it with a couple other council members who were there at that meeting, one who's no longer on the council, and their recollection was similar to mine. So I thought to do the right thing would be to bring this back and just clean it up. I talked to the city attorney, and he's prepared some language which is before us today. Council members have any questions? Mr. Fitzmaurice.
My comment is that this would put us, as I understand it, would put us in conformance with the way the police department is currently instructing its employees in terms of enforcement. So this actually reflects the way that the ordinance has been understood in recent days. And so it's really just adjusting the ordinance to reflect current practices.
Mr. Porter.
I'd just like to say that I had contemplated supporting this, and the only reason my signature isn't there is because I wasn't available when it came time to get my signature, but I would have been a supporter had that happened. So my name is printed there, but my signature is there in spirit.
Thank you. I'd like to go to the members of the public. How many members of the public would like to address the council on this issue? Seeing three, four, five hands. All right. Would you please step forward? You'll be given 3 minutes. I know one gentleman asked about his organization, and if you're representing an organization, you can get 5 minutes. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mayor. Members of the council, my name is Jeffrey Smedberg. I'm a resident of the city. I'm also president of the Service Employees International Union, Local 415, which represents approximately 1,000 city employees, including a lot of your temporary workers and many of the lower paid employees of the city. And the reason why I'm here before you today is that in the current economic times, there are a lot of our members who are wondering how long they're going to still have their jobs, and if they lose their employment, some of them may be out on the street and looking for an inexpensive place to live. And for that reason, I'm here before you today to speak in favor of this change in the ordinance to make it a little easier for those members of our community who don't have regular homes and regular places to sleep to be able to stay here in the community and be active members of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
I'm Becky Johnson. I'd like to thank council members Emily Riley, Ed Porter, and Mayor Chris Crone for speedily dealing with this error, as five members of the council promised to do at your last meeting. I think it demonstrates good faith when council members take the time to listen to members of the community, to examine the record, and if a mistake has been made, act to correct it without needless delay. This is the case here, and I believe the community should recognize this. The three-day per calendar month limitation put on up to one car per private residence was placed into law on the suggestion of council member Tim Fitzmaurice. I think this puts a needless limitation on good Samaritans throughout our city who might want to help a homeless friend or neighbor by providing a safe and legal place for them to sleep. Remember, this council passed a resolution December 8, 1998, declaring sleep is a human right. If you don't have any legal or safe places for people to sleep, how can you profess that sleep is a human right? It's such a simple statement of fact that I think few would disagree. There was no scientific basis for the three-day per calendar month limitation on persons in a private driveway. There are no models in other cities which we are following. And I doubt there have been any problems with people using the private driveway with the permission of the owner and tenant for sleeping at night. Please ask staff for an FYI to determine if any complaints have been lodged since this was...